Just in time for summer, the folks at Epic Brewing have released a new canned cocktail, the Utah Margarita. A delicious blend of real lime and agave, the Utah Margarita is ready to drink by the river or in the park. And here's the kicker, no need to buy it at a liquor store. Pick up a six-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, or visit Epic Brewing on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. Today on CityCast Salt Lake, our team spent election night in the Salt Lake Tribune's newsroom hanging out with some of our favorite political reporters, like columnist Robert Gerke, who has spent more than 20 years covering government. He and I were up late last night to make sense of these early election results. Today is Wednesday, November 9th, 2022. I'm Allie Vallarta, and this is CityCast Salt Lake. All right, Robert Gerke, we are in the Salt Lake Tribune headquarters in the podcast studio. It's nice to see your face.
It's good to see you, too. Thanks for coming down.
Well, happy to be here, and we brought cookies. We've been getting some slow ballot dumps tonight. I want to start talking about how the election went overall, because you tweeted asking folks to share their voting experience. What'd you hear? How do you think it went?
Well, I mean, I was kind of interested in that just to see if there were problems out there, if they had any hiccups voting. Maybe it's a function of my Twitter followers, but they all said that, you know, they mailed it in or dropped it off and everything went smooth. I did the same thing. It was smooth as could be. And then at the end of the night, we hit this glitch where, you know, people were still in line and the LG's office said, we're not going to release any results until everybody votes. And so, we were waiting till 9:30, 10 o'clock before we actually started seeing significant Salt Lake County numbers, for example, come in. So it made for a late night.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because one of the things that we did kind of get a pulse on early in the night is just that turnout in Salt Lake County was low. Like Lieutenant Governor Deidre Henderson said, as of 6 p.m., lowest county in the state in terms of performance.
Yeah, and I think part of that was that they had ballots that they hadn't processed yet. So we need to wait and see where the final numbers end up. But yeah, it's a midterm election. Midterm elections are always a little dicey, If you think back 4 years ago, we had huge midterm election turnout, but we also had a medical marijuana initiative, redistricting initiative, Medicaid expansion. So those brought a lot of people out who probably wouldn't have otherwise voted in a midterm. So we weren't really expecting to see that kind of turnout, but I think we'll probably get about 2/3 of the voters registered in the state having cast ballots.
Okay. So this is the first general election that we're having after the legislature redistricted the state's voting boundaries. Yeah. One of the things they did, which they've done in the past, is carve Salt Lake County into four different districts. How did that impact the results tonight?
Well, I think we saw that none of those four races were competitive, remotely competitive. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of a function of two things. One is it's really hard to recruit a candidate to go out there and run in a district that, you know, that deck stacked against you from the get-go.
Yeah.
And the other thing is they made all of these districts considerably safer for the Republicans. And so, you know, Burgess Owens, you look back 2 years, he barely won that race. Tonight, he's just running away with it, you know. And so it's kind of taken away any competitiveness from those congressional races. I think maybe that's part of the reason we saw depressed turnout, especially in Salt Lake County, because, you know, again, if your vote for Congress isn't going to matter, then, you know, why go out and do it?
Yeah. It does feel like people are really disillusioned by gerrymandering, which you brought up. Like, I worked in local politics forever, and I'm in a group chat full of, like, heavily involved politicos. Yeah. And this morning when they were like, yeah, we haven't turned in our ballots yet, I was like, uh-oh, this is foreshadowing.
Well, and, you know, there's the litigation that's working its way through the courts, but it wasn't going to, you know, be done in time for this election. They're hoping, you know, they'll get a decision by 2024. But, you know, there's a Supreme Court case that could impact how that one plays out. So, you know, I think otherwise we've got, you know, another 8 years of these boundaries that really stack the deck against Democrats and make it, you know. It also, I think worse than that, removes any form of accountability, because mm-hmm. if these members of Congress know that they aren't really going to be held accountable at the ballot box, they really only have to campaign to their Republican base. I think that really does a disservice to the whole concept of democratic government.
Right. It stacks the deck against voters, because mm-hmm. if it depresses turnout, then that's just bad for democracy overall.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is disheartening to see how quickly federal races are called in this state, even when I think people put a lot of energy mm-hmm. into them. It's always thrilling to be involved in a federal race. On that note, independent candidate, technically unaffiliated candidate, yeah. Evan McMullen has already conceded to incumbent Senator Mike Lee.
Yeah, we waited for that one for a little while before we recorded this, didn't we?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
You know, it was a fascinating race. We've not seen anything like it before in this state, where, you know, he tries to break the mold, you know, break out of this two-party Republican-Democrat dichotomy that we've had and hasn't worked going back 50 years. And, you know, it didn't work again. But it was something new. It was something interesting. It was the most expensive U.S. Senate race in the state's history. Millions mm-hmm. of dollars pouring in from both the candidates and from these super PACs that were just pumping these negative ads out.
Right.
You know, I was excited to see him try it, just because the way we have it doesn't represent the mainstream Utahns, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
And this just kind of gave there, on paper at least, you could see there was a path to maybe getting a more representative and a competitive election. And it was, I mean, despite, you know, the margin not being terribly close,
mm-hmm.
He did get more, a higher percentage than I think any candidate going back to 1976.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it wasn't where I think they wanted it to end up, obviously.
Right.
And Mike Lee's a tough candidate because mm-hmm. he is very popular with his base, and this is a red state. And you know, I think at the end of the day, those negative ads that we saw just all over the airwaves,
everywhere,
really had, you know, made an impact on the outcome of this.
Yeah.
People say they don't like negative ads, but they, you know, all campaigns use negative ads because they work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have an expression where I'm from, which is Democrats fall in love and Republicans fall in line. And it feels like this race is exactly that. Because in order for Evan McMullen to get the kind of turnout that he needed, he really did need to shore up more Republicans. Like, not even one elected Republican endorsed him.
Yeah, I think that was a real I mean, you had people coming in from Adam Kinzinger, you know, mm-hmm. coming in from out of state and, you know, speaking on his behalf. Michael Steele, the former RNC chairman, endorsed him, but local Republicans didn't get behind him at all. And, you know, there was a window of opportunity there for that to happen, because we saw in the Republican primary, Mike Lee had two challengers, and Becky Edwards and Allie Isom, and they combined for, I believe, about 38% of the vote, which, you know, that's a area of opportunity for somebody to come in and say, hey, you don't like Mike Lee, what, you know, it didn't work out for you in the primary, why don't you vote for me? I'm curious to see when all the dust settles, what the Republican turnout or what the Republican support was for him. But it looks like it's probably not what he would have needed on paper to get across the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
And I also think the Democrats seem to have stayed home. And I get that there were a lot of hard feelings about the way the party decided not to, you know, nominate Cale Weston. But, you know, at the end of the day, this was probably the best chance. I always put it this way. It's the best chance in my lifetime as a voter to actually have my vote count in a U.S. Senate race.
In Utah. Yeah.
In Utah. Yeah.
Epic Brewing is one of the OGs in building Utah's craft beer scene. But I am most excited about their recent adventures in canned cocktails. First, they released the Utah Mule. And as a big fan of ginger, I have been sipping those for almost a year now. But now, this April, we have the Utah Margarita, a delicious, locally fermented blend of real lime and agave. And they create alcohol by fermenting cane sugar instead of using tequila, which means you can buy Utah margaritas at the grocery store. Pick up a 6-pack of Epic Brewing's Utah Margarita or Utah Mule at any local Harmon's or Trader Joe's, Or you can visit Epic Brewery on State Street in downtown Salt Lake City. They're open 7 days a week. And this fall, look out for the Utah Cosmo. We talk a lot on this show about our city's crown jewels. What are the institutions that open doors in our community and regulate its pulse? I choose Salt Lake Community College. And it is a home for incredibly focused Salt Lakers. Nearly 80% of their students work while going to school, many full-time jobs. If I could do college all over again, I would not be 33 and sitting on these damn student loans. And slick students aren't. 80% graduate with little to no student loan debt or save thousands knocking out credits before transferring to a four-year institution. Every day, Salt Lake Community College is transforming lives and communities through education. If you want to learn something new, refine a trade, or pursue a higher degree for the first time, explore your options at slcc.edu. Study alongside hard workers, save precious money, and be one in a class of 19, not 100.
Well, you touched on how much money was pumped into this race. The last I checked, it was $30 million between the two candidates and outside funding. Mm-hmm. I think the question everyone's waking up with this morning is, was it worth it?
Well, you know, I think maybe in some ways it made Mike Lee go out and raise money. It made the Republican PACs come dump money here that they weren't spending then in Pennsylvania and Georgia and Nevada. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, you're expanding the field a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think it was pretty clear, like in the beginning of October, that Mike Lee was actually concerned about this race because you really saw him step up his campaign efforts and the fundraising efforts, and the negative attacks that came in were a lot more vicious. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a point where he was actually worried about the direction this race was going. Was it worth it? Did it, you know, I don't know. I doubt that Mike Lee's been, you know, is going to change the way he operates.
Right. He doesn't seem bruised. He didn't seem bruised in his victory speech tonight.
No, he was pretty smug in his victory speech tonight, to be honest. So, no, I don't know that it necessarily changes anything. But what I hope it does is it sort of shifts people's perception of the way the two parties operate in this state going forward. You know, because we always have prided ourselves on being an independent Westerner streak, and maybe this gave people an opportunity to say, well, hey, I don't have to be a Republican necessarily just because that's what I've always been, and maybe, you know, we can break out of that partisan divide a little bit, and have candidates who really try to get out there and communicate to sort of the average Utahn. Because I don't think they get listened to enough. They don't get listened to enough because, as we were talking about with the congressional races, you really only have to win the Republican primary to win your election. Mm-hmm. And I think the same is largely true in the Senate races.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, like, if you're a Democratic strategist walking away from this night, which I feel like I get to weigh in here because I used to be one, mm-hmm. I think you're looking at where people did turn out in this county. And you just have to acknowledge that, like, for Democrats in this state, if they want to consolidate power, the place to do it is down ballot, right? Yeah. Like, Evan McMullen raised $7 million. I don't know. If you put $100,000 into West Valley City, Taylorsville City Council, right? Like, the strategy just has to be about the groundswell. I'm also interested to see if maybe some Democrats walk away from this and are like, all right, we need to put more money into ballot initiatives.
Yeah. Well, I think in the future, that's a good strategy for midterms to, you know, get people out if they're otherwise not excited about voting, you know, find something that does. You know, Colorado passed a ballot initiative on psychedelics. That's kind of, I don't see Utah going that direction necessarily, but, you know, we saw in 2018 that the ballot initiatives can bring people out who otherwise might not vote in a midterm election. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing that's kind of interesting, though, is, you know, the Democrats, it looks like we're still waiting for some of the results, so I guess we should kind of provide a caveat. But it looks like they might win the Salt Lake County Council seat with Suzanne Harrison knocking off a longtime incumbent Richard Snellgrove. Sim Gill appears headed to hold on to the DA's office. And Lonnie Chapman was leading in the clerk's race. And so, you know, in Salt Lake County, maybe it's not a terrible night for them. You know, and some of the House races are still pretty close, so we'll have to watch and see how those go.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I don't think... you know, the prognosticators coming into the election nationally were saying, well, this could be a red wave. This could be a bloodbath for Democrats. I don't know that we necessarily got that. We got a convincing win from Mike Lee. We got convincing wins from the congressional delegation, which, again, that was sort of a foregone conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, down ballot, there were some decent performances, I think.
Yeah. I love that you brought up Suzanne Harrison, because I feel like Dr. Harrison is such an interesting candidate to follow. Like, this is someone who has run over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
She continues to show up in some of the same places, knocking the same doors. And like, you really saw that payoff. It seems like we're gonna see, we should say,
yeah,
hands up, that payoff for her in this election cycle. Like, people feel like they know her. She's homegrown.
Yeah, I remember the first time I encountered her was her first race for the House, and she lost it by 3 votes. And
yeah,
I saw a tweet from her today that said, you know, if you think your vote doesn't count, just remember that, you know, I lost my first campaign by 3 votes, and now she came back and won the next one. And now then they kind of tried to mess with her district during the redistricting process. And so she said, well, I'm not going to do that again. She decided to run for county council. And it looks like she's headed to victory. We're still waiting to see results. We're going to get a little bit more tonight. We'll see some more during the rest of the week. But
yeah,
Right now it looks pretty good for her.
Yeah. Okay, while we're at the bottom of the ballot, let's talk about the two things that were at the bottom of everyone's ballot that I think that constitutional amendment, A, I think everyone got their ballot, looked at that, and was like, sorry, what? Who's this guy?
I wrote a piece about that a couple weeks ago just because I kept getting texts from people saying, what is this? I had no idea this was on there. So basically what it was, if you remember back a few years, there was this fight between the governor and the legislature over who has the power to convene a special session.
Mm.
Governor Herbert didn't want to call a special session. The legislature did. And so the governor won because constitutionally he's the only one who could do it. So the legislature changed the constitution sort of to put a finger in his eye, right?
So they are nimble.
So they could now call themselves into special session for an emergency. And they've taken that emergency term and stretched it about as far as you could possibly imagine. But they also had this limit where they could only adjust the budget by 1%, so $250 million roughly.
Yeah.
You know.
Plenty.
It seems like plenty, but then they got into the pandemic and said, well, we need more. You know, we need more latitude. This is too constrictive, even though they could conceivably call themselves into session again and again and again until they get what they want.
Mm.
So they were going to raise it to about $1.25 billion, five times that much. And I think I think people saw that and are just they're not comfortable with the way that the legislature is taking power, because it didn't just lose. I mean, it's lost in almost every county of the state,
yeah,
and by significant margins. And so I think this wasn't a high profile thing, but I think people saw it on their ballot and read it and thought, no, this is, you know, we've gone far enough. And so,
mm-hmm,
you know, back to the drawing board for them. But maybe, hopefully, they come away and take the message from that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting to see that, like, maybe the one thing that all political parties represented in Utah can agree on is that they don't want the legislature to have more power.
Well, and it's been an ongoing, you know, a process that they've just been stripping power away from everybody. And I think there's a point where maybe they overplayed their hand.
Hmm. Yeah, that's interesting. Okay, let's talk about the parks bond quickly, because that's a fun one. It's a Salt Lake City thing.
Yeah.
It looks like it's going to pass $85 million.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a little bit surprising because these bonds always have such a hard road, right?
Right.
Or trail, so to speak.
Nice.
But, you know, because people don't want to pay more in taxes typically.
I mean, you have to wonder if in the aftermath of the pandemic, people are starting to have a little bit more love for our public spaces. Like,
yeah,
for a while, they were the only place we could go.
Yeah. I mean, I think, yeah, we all saw the numbers about people recreating outdoors more often. And I think maybe some of that's held over. And I think particularly if people think that they're going to see something in their community, something that, you know, is tangible or at least enjoyable for them in every one of their neighborhoods, then I think maybe they're a little bit more likely to get on board with it. So.
Well, and of course, I'm obsessed with voting local. And I think that is like, that's so consistent, right? It's like, don't run on these big ideas of like accountability or whatever, like run on a stop sign, like run on trash pickup, run on the stuff that people really feel. And that is, I feel like, has been proven time and time again to be like the way to get people really engaged in things and excited about voting.
That's a really good point, because we didn't really see much of that in the U.S. Senate race. We didn't hear people talking about ideas or delivering, you know, for the constituents.
No.
We didn't hear any of that in the congressional races.
Mm-mm.
And so, you know, it's in these local elections that you start getting a little bit more meat on the bones, I guess, having talks about ideas and actually things that you can deliver and run on. And I think that's why people get into the business of politics, I think.
Right.
So
I hope looking forward we see more of that. And less campaigning on the idea that, like, I'm not this guy, I'm not that, you know, but we'll see, we'll see, we'll see, we'll see. Okay, I have a last question for you that's a bit of an exercise before we go.
Okay.
The punditry is just beginning this morning. We're going to see a lot of headlines roll in the next few weeks about this election. Mm-hmm. If you had to write three headlines tonight, what would they be?
Oh, I mean, the big takeaway one is that Republicans took the House, and that's going to mean for the next 2 years we're going to have a lot of investigations into the Biden administration, aggressive oversight. Mike Lee was talking about it tonight in his victory speech, although it's unclear if Republicans are going to take the Senate. But taking the House is enough, because I think, you know, that kind of means the next 2 years are sort of written for us. It's going to be pretty ugly. And I think
exhausting.
Yeah, it's going to be exhausting. And the people who are disenchanted with politics will probably get more disenchanted with politics.
Mm-hmm. What about here?
I think more locally, I think the performance of the Democrats in Salt Lake County kind of shows that even in a midterm election that was supposed to not be good for them, that they came out and actually, you know, showed up and performed.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess, you know, the third one, we talked a lot about the Senate race, but that's the one I paid most attention to, I think, over the course of the last year, you know, negative ads work, and it's hard to beat the system, you know, you can try it and you have a lot of support, and sometimes it just doesn't work out. So the system is resilient, because, you know, it serves the people who keep it that way. So I guess those would probably be my three takeaways.
Yeah. TV ad consultants everywhere bracing for another big windfall in two more years.
Yeah. Well, that's going to be an interesting one with Senator Romney on the ballot if he runs again. So, yeah, we'll see how that one goes.
Well, I just have to say, like, I wish they didn't post the results until they were all done, because this part of it, like, it is sort of fun to be like tracking, but there is something just exhausting. Like, here we are, we're tired late night, like we're trying to make sense of it, and we just don't have everything yet.
Yeah. And it'll be a couple more weeks before some of these races are decided, I think. So, especially the close ones, which we're still trying to get our head around those. So.
Yeah. Well, Robert Gerke, thank you so much. I hope for at least tonight you get some sleep soon.
You too. Thanks for having me.
As you know, because of Utah's mail ballot and the general delicacy of ballot processing, elections can take a while to sort out. Especially this year, where lines at the polls stretched into the evening. We will give you a full rundown on local election results this Friday. In the meantime, you can watch for daily election updates in our newsletter, Hey Salt Lake. If you aren't already subscribed, I put a link in the show notes. And if you're not already, you should really be following our friends at the Salt Lake Tribune. That's all for us today here on CityCast Salt Lake. Shout out to our friends at the Trib for hosting. Thank you for listening, and we will be back tomorrow morning with more from around this city. Bye. Knock, knock, it's fascism. Knock, knock.
Don't answer the call,
Oh, the call's coming from inside the house, by the way.